Welcome to a podcast brought to you by the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. Our academy is a national organization committed to excellence in orthopedic manual physical therapy practice, education, and research. And we're here to explore a wide range of topics with you through interviews with content experts.
Hello, my name is Stephen Schaefer, and I'm one of the co-hosts of the AAMP podcast. I'm pleased to let you know that once again, we have just completed our annual AAMP conference, which took place from November 4th to the 8th. This time around, we went virtual for the first time in our academy's history, which should not be a surprise to anyone that's paid attention to 2020. While we enjoy bringing you interviews from research publications, beginning with this week's episode, you're going to start hearing interviews with presenters from our 2020 annual conference. We haven't finalized all of the interviews yet, so I don't have a final number for you, but you can expect somewhere around 5 or 10 episodes from the conference series, and then we'll switch back to our regular content. If you like what you hear during these episodes, then please consider checking out next year's conference, which, dare I say, should be held in Cleveland, Ohio, from October 6th to the 10th. I know last year on the podcast I said roughly the same thing, but let's hope that in October 2021, we are able to do a whole lot more traveling so we can have less physical distancing. Also, if you want to learn more about both past and future AAMP events, which include our annual conferences, then please check out our Academy's web link in the show notes. You'll always be able to find the Conferences tab on the homepage of our website. Now, let's get to the interview. Our guest today is Dr. Stephen Kinney. Dr. Kinney works at Indiana University Health. He also has an affiliation with Indiana State University, where he assists in their cardiopulmonary labs. He has practiced in multiple settings, including subacute and inpatient rehab, acute care hospital settings, and outpatient services. He is a certified strength and conditioning specialist and achieved certification as an integrated manual therapist. In addition, he completed extensive training in neurodevelopmental treatment and is board certified in orthopedics. Currently, Dr. Kinney is pursuing a fellowship in orthopedic manual physical therapy and will hopefully soon be a full fellow of our esteemed academy. We invited Dr. Kinney to the podcast because he was a presenter at this year's academy conference. His presentation, which caught my eye immediately, was titled A Breath of Fresh Air, Manual Therapy for Dyspnea. I think this conversation is guaranteed to be interesting, so let's find out what Dr. Kinney has to teach us. Dr. Kinney, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Very good. I'm excited to be here. I also want to just give a shout out to my co-presenter, Jeremy Hauser, who's also going to be presenting A Breath of Fresh Air with me at the AAMP conference. And we are looking forward to tackling it and having a good time.
I do not doubt that you're going to have a good time. That's both of you, of course. The conference is always, I find, a very good time to see presentations like this. Unfortunately, this year we're not going to be face-to-face in the same way, but there's no doubt in my mind that it's still going to be a spectacular experience. And as is always the case, I say always, this is our third time in a row, I believe, doing recordings for the conference. So this is, for us, still kind of a new thing, but we're getting into the rhythm of it. And we are very excited not just to have you in the conference, but also to have you here on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
Speaking of which, let's dive in. And I'd like to start by talking a little bit about your clinical background. Unlike myself, and I've mostly worked in orthopedic outpatient settings, you've worked in a lot of different clinical environments. And I think that gives you maybe not just a different point of view, but many different points of view when it comes to, for example, manual therapy and the profession in general. Bearing all of that in mind, can you describe for us a little bit what your clinical history has been like and how that may, for example, help inform your understanding of a topic like breathlessness? And let's add on to that how it relates specifically to the thoracic spine, the rib cage, and manual therapy.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think my clinical experiences, they've been very varied over the years. So I started off actually in a brain injury, doing an acute rehab unit to start off my career. And then I also worked in an acute care setting and doing outpatient orthopedics all at the same time, trying to pay off those loans, but also kind of viewing it as a way to gain experience and see the many different aspects of the field of physical therapy. And my career has kind of progressed since then, where I've been working in a lot of different clinical settings throughout. I think there is a strong neuro focus, but I've had a lot of cardiopulm exposure through the different rehab settings and acute care. I was actually very lucky to have one of my first clinicals in at New York Presbyterian Hospital, where they have a very strong cardiopulmonary presence. When I was working on the brain injury unit, we had a lot of patients who were had tracheostomies and had some pretty impaired respiratory status. And through that, I've actually got a lot of mentorship through different colleagues in the field, including Mary Massery. I have another colleague that I worked with at JFK Johnson, Jen Lazzaro. So I was able to pick up a lot from a lot of different people. And I think one of my clinical interests is, with my varied experience, is trying to integrate all the different great things we do in our specialty areas. And I think manual therapy for dyspnea is really one of the great ways we can do that, where we take a little bit from maybe that orthopedic realm and incorporate it from in the cardiopulm world. And I think it's pretty cool, some of the things that we can do.
I agree. And I've had a little bit of that experience myself. For example, I've in different hospitals covered inpatient units when, you know, the staffing levels required me to do so. And I can't just shut off that orthopedic manual therapist brain when I go onto a floor like that. And it's certainly true that, you know, I'm a much weaker therapist when it comes to identifying the lines and reading the charts and knowing everything that's going on. But even in that setting, I've seen how they also might be overlooking things like the knee joint stiffness, or how a limitation in the glenohumeral joint might be inhibiting things like self-care with bathing and dressing and so on. And I think it's so interesting when you start to meld those different areas together so that we can hopefully not just attempt, but successfully execute better care for that patient.
Exactly. And I think you don't need to necessarily do 30 minutes of manual therapy with every patient in an inpatient setting. There's many days where I won't do a ton of manual therapy if I'm working in acute care, but maybe spend like 2 or 3 minutes doing one isolated technique because it's important for that patient. I actually remember a patient who I had recently who was doing really well with physical therapy, and I was leaving, and she was just a little bit down and frustrated because she couldn't do her knitting. So I was like, oh, well, can I help out with that? And it was just as simple as doing some quick mobilizations of her wrist and giving her a self-mobilization. She's like, oh, okay, then I could get back to this. It feels a whole lot better now. And while it doesn't seem like a big deal, for someone in the hospital, being able to do human-type things is really important to their recovery, basically.
I think that's great. And of course, it speaks to how sometimes when our professions, and this, of course, is not just a statement about physical therapy, but when our healthcare professions become too siloed, it's almost like we fail to see the interconnectedness of what we do. And of course, it would be ideal to prevent that from happening. And as we move into that topic in general, let's actually be more specific when it comes to these individuals that are more pertaining to your presentation, the breathlessness patient, which, you know, brings us away from your example of the wrist and brings us up towards the axial skeleton with the thoracic spine and rib cage. Can you give us an example of the types of diagnoses that you have been utilizing manual therapy with to help these individuals improve?
Yes, I think there's a lot of different diagnoses where you can use these different manual techniques. So that can include like COPD, restrictive disease, someone with an elevated high blood pressure. And not all of these patients will necessarily have specifically the narrow definition of dyspnea, but something that they perceive as shortness of breath. And it's similar to when you're treating a patient maybe with vertigo, that patient will describe their dizziness in a way where maybe it's more lightheadedness, or maybe it is actually that vertigo where the room is spinning around, or maybe they just mean they're off balance. dyspnea or shortness of breath can mean different things to our patients too. And a lot of times a diagnosis can help guide that manual therapy, but a lot of times the symptoms and the clinical presentation of the patient will guide it a little bit more. I think a really good example too is for patients who have just had to stay in the ICU. A lot of times those patients who have had to stay in the ICU, no matter how long it is, are going to have these lingering deficits, which will often include dyspnea. And it's something that we need to consider manual therapy as appropriate with these patients. I want to take a moment and say right now that I don't think for every single patient who has dyspnea, we do not necessarily need to utilize manual therapy. But I think when it's clinically indicated or when there's a good clinical rationale, it can be a very helpful technique and augment what we do, because especially in the acute hospital setting, you're talking about mobilization is going to be probably the first, second, and third most important thing we can do. But that doesn't mean that there's not an opportunity to include manual therapy techniques to help out with dyspnea, especially if dyspnea is a pretty large barrier or obstacle for the patient in front of you.
What you're making me think of right now is actually my clinical practice, although of course, the variables are a little bit different. And when I'm practicing, one of the things I see, one of the patterns I would say that is very common is the fact that I have the patient, they're tight, they're having trouble moving. In my case, it's usually pain that I'm treating, but sometimes it is a perceived difficulty with breathing. And they do something like lie down in bed all night, or maybe they're sitting in a chair working for an 8-hour day, or maybe they're in the car driving for an hour or four. And then when they get out of that position or wake up in the morning, they're tighter than they were when they went into that position. And they need to stretch out in the morning. And similarly, when I push on them in the table, which is a bit more aggressive, they frequently will get up off the table and say, I feel like I can breathe better. You know, so whether in my experience, we're talking about outpatient, or in your experience, both outpatient and inpatient, I can totally see how that manual therapy technique, et cetera, is going to interface with an ability for someone to feel like they can breathe more easily.
Absolutely. And I think that it's not necessarily an inpatient versus an outpatient thing. Like you said, these are very relevant for the outpatient population. When we made this proposal, this was really before COVID-19 took off. And I think right now, there is an increasing awareness that we need to be able to treat dyspnea in the patients that we see. I think there was a belief for a period of time that we were just going to get flooded with, in the therapy world, patients post COVID-19 who needed to get back to their previous level of function. Particularly in the practice areas that I work in, we really haven't seen that. But I think the reason why we haven't seen that is because those patients are traditionally not formally referred to physical therapy for their deconditioning, for their dyspnea, and the other deficits that they have. And if you look at the studies with like acute respiratory distress syndrome in the past, those patients are going to present very similar to our COVID-19 patients. Those patients have pretty significant functional limitations. Over 50% of those people won't go back to the job that they had before. And they're going to have a host of issues, including obviously dyspnea as well, but also difficulties with endurance. And then oftentimes they're also going to be related psychosocial influences for these patients as well. And I think it's important that as outpatient therapists, we try and capture more of these people who we are not necessarily seeing in outpatient practice and are not necessarily being referred to us. We need to try and seek these people out, because I think there's a great opportunity to provide high value care with these individuals.
One of the potential themes that's running through my head right now, and this should be obvious to any listener who's familiar with physio, and that is the concept of red flags. So orthopedic manual therapists tend to work in the outpatient world, but obviously not exclusively. And we're looking for a certain type of red flag relative to maybe the cervical spine or the skeleton in general, or maybe referred pain from the abdomen, or, you know, anything like that. There are a lot of different examples. in the settings that you're working in, when you're using manual therapy on an individual that's having some of this difficulty or straining with breathing, what red flags are you looking for? And, you know, is there anything that truly says, no, I'm not going to use manual therapy on this patient? And please forgive me if that's way too broad of a question, but if you could just give us your general sentiment of what's going on there and maybe package it up in a some sort of clinically friendly message.
So, yeah, there's definitely a lot you want to consider in terms of those red flags. And I think to kind of simply put it, if you're having significant acute changes with an individual in terms of their shortness of breath, that most of the time is going to be a red flag. And that's for someone, I think, both on the inpatient side and the outpatient side, those dramatic changes in function, changes in shortness of breath can definitely be a harbinger of bad things to come. And those are the times where we need to use our clinical judgment to get other professionals involved, because orthopedic manual therapy is not going to be the most effective intervention for someone who's having cardiac arrest. For a manual therapy, that would make sense. That would be chest compressions and CPR. We need to make sure that those people who have big acute changes in shortness of breath, that we watch out for them. And sometimes that actually doesn't necessarily need to be, that change doesn't need to be they're having shortness of breath at rest. If you have a high-level athlete who was running 20 miles a week before, but now can barely run 100 meters without getting short of breath, but doesn't have shortness of breath with anything else, that would also raise suspicions for myself too. So I think that is what we need to do. And if we think about, like, kind of, we sometimes think about like pain as an alarm system, and we know that we need to be mindful and rule out the red flags when pain's involved. I would think of dyspnea as sometimes a little bit an alarm system we should care a little bit more about. So with pain, an alarm system goes off. With dyspnea, it's kind of like the windows in our house are being broken open or we hear gunshots. We should be a little bit more scared when there is we're unsure of where these dyspnea symptoms are coming from. So I would say when in doubt, refer out.
That makes 100% sense. And I can see how if you saw one of those clinical signs or symptoms, you would think to yourself, I need to get this patient off towards the appropriate medical provider. But how about in the other direction? Is there anything that you see that would strongly indicate to you, because of this variable or that variable, I'm confident that manual therapy is likely to be beneficial for this patient?
I think a good starting point for those individuals would be if there's an expectation of benefit. I think that's probably one of the easiest ways to start off with someone. The person is like, oh man, I heard someone pop my friend's rib back in place and he was able to help with the breathing. And that's something we see when treating individuals with persistent pain. There was a great study by Bishop who looked at patient expectations when treating the cervical spine. And if there was an expectation of benefit with a certain treatment, there was that expectation led to much better functional outcomes. And that's pretty similar to what we can see in individuals with dyspnea. If you look at some of the research on airway clearance, they have found that the airway clearance technique, sometimes it doesn't matter too much between different techniques, but if there's a patient preference, that patient preference should really drive the delivery of that airway clearance technique. And I think we can safely utilize that clinical decision-making process when we're treating these patients. Another thing I would say is if you can't get to the really high-value interventions that you need to, like progressive exercise or progressive activity, if the patient can't do that because of they're limited by the dyspnea, I think it's worthwhile to consider using manual therapy on that individual, because that might help get them over the hump to be able to engage in those interventions that are also going to have a really strong impact on their dyspnea conditioning and overall function.
One of the troubles I'm having in my head right now is picturing exactly what you're doing. Of course, as an outpatient therapist, I picture a traditional high-low mat. I've got the patient prone, supine, side-lying. I'm working on the rib cage or the thoracic spine with PA glides or AP glides, and of course, a lot of other techniques. In the inpatient setting or any other of these scenarios, what techniques in terms of manual therapy are you using for this patient population?
So I think it there's a couple different techniques. It can be some of those more traditional orthopedic manual techniques. Things that I find have pretty high value for individuals will be using something like rib mobilizations or thoracic spine mobilizations, and definitely myofascial release or manual therapy techniques delivered to that that rib cage. And I think that there's, and as long as you're in that area, if you're trying to get areas that are moving that are not moving, you can really get some benefit out of that. So that patient who comes to you and really doesn't have that lateral chest expansion and is really not moving their lower ribs, there can be a great value in trying to help that patient recruit that area to be able to give them a little bit more breath support to do the activities that they want. Another maybe intervention that's a little less commonly used in orthopedic manual therapy is kind of a chest wall excursion where you provide compression. And this is particularly useful in someone who has COPD, where you're providing some compression with exhalation to help that individual who is likely trapping air get that air out so that way they can get more oxygenated air going into their system. So that might be something a little bit more unique to the orthopedic manual therapist, but something that I kind of use in clinical practice as well. Other things you can look at is manually resisted inspiratory muscle training, or even manual facilitation of different breathing patterns that could potentially be helpful for the patient.
And are you following these different techniques, whether they're manually directed or more independently, with some sort of home program that somebody can do while they're in the hospital? Or are you just waiting until you come back to see how they've done?
Generally, there's going to be some type of home program to reinforce what we're doing. And sometimes that home program can be for a patient who's maybe a little bit more resistant to mobilizing around. It might be, I want you to walk a little bit more. I want you to walk frequently throughout the day, because rather than doing a specific exercise, just that mobilization is going to be a much more important factor for that patient. But for the patient who is willing to do that and wants to do more, I think a specific home program where they are themselves maybe resisting a different area of their rib cage, or they're performing their own thoracic mobilization, that also can be very much indicated as well.
Forgive my small aside here, but I just realized the ridiculousness of us calling this a home program if they're in the hospital. I probably should have asked you more about an independent program or, you know, family assisted or what have you. But I still think those are great ideas. I can see it in my head. And of course, anytime that we can get the patient engaged and participating, we tend to see better outcomes, which leads me towards my next question. I am curious to know what types of outcomes you're getting. I know, for example, in my clinical practice, I'm using test, treat, retest, and I'm looking not just for that immediate improvement, but then also session to session, so on and so forth. And I can't in my head fully imagine, because I've never worked in the way that you've worked. What are you getting? You spend a minute or 5 minutes or whatever it is, or one visit or three visits. What can you perceive as being the benefit of what you're doing?
So I think that's an excellent question. I would say, yes, I think that patient response model that we tend to use in orthopedic manual therapy is incredibly relevant for the patient with dyspnea, wherever you're seeing them. And I think that we need to have meaningful outcomes, if not for us in terms of functional outcome measures, things that are important to the patient. So if that patient is complaining of dyspnea, then we need to be able to see, they need to have that subjective improvement of in dyspnea that is going to help them out, that they feel is meaningful. You can also look at physically being able to maybe go for a longer walk could be an outcome that is significant. And maybe it's not on a formal 6-minute walk test, but that patient can go from a 30-foot walk to a 50-foot walk, or that 30-foot walk that they're doing now feels easier for that patient. You potentially could use different types of vital signs as clinical measures. There's a good amount of research for manual interventions to help decrease blood pressure. There's also, I think with the chest wall excursion that I was kind of talking about before, in some cases, I think you can get actually some better oxygen saturation for individuals with COPD. I don't know if that should be expectation every single time, but those are different possibilities that you can look for when you utilizing these techniques.
I think all of those options are great. And if I can wrap this back around to something that you said earlier, I can completely see how a skilled manual therapist in that setting could actually, even when it didn't exist previously, build up a patient expectation that something is going to be helpful. For example, maybe this individual is in the hospital, they're not feeling well, they're not breathing well. And then you come in and say, hey, I'm going to do this technique here. It may or may not help you breathe better. Let's just see how it goes. And then, like you said, they can walk farther, do more, et cetera. Maybe the next day when you're coming back, you have planted that idea seed in their head. And now they're maybe more willing, ready, able, et cetera, to participate in the physio session.
100%. I think that is definitely an important element of it too, getting that buy-in and that participation. And I think that's one of the great strengths of that patient response model. And I think, yeah, that can't be overlooked.
I have a very personal, and I'm going to describe it as a selfish question for you. And that's specifically because you're both in the orthopedic manual therapy realm and in the lung realm in a more acute setting. I have been trained, of course, to look for things like Pancoast tumors. And I've spent the last, 12 years of my life screening for a Pancoast tumor. And luckily, I've never found one. I would like to know, have you ever encountered a patient who had a Pancoast tumor?
I have not, but I'll respond to your interesting question with an interesting story. So basically, we talked about that individual who could run 20 miles like the week before and then couldn't run 100 meters. I have actually had that person, and that person was actually me. And it was when that happened, it was weird because I didn't know exactly what was going on with me because I was breathing, doing everything normal at rest. But it actually turned out where I had a spontaneous pneumothorax. And it was very weird because I basically had it for 2 days and wasn't aware of it until I tried to go for a run. It's humbling sometimes as a therapist to not necessarily pick up on those things that happen right away with you, because I didn't have any other signs until I ran. When I ran, I knew something was wrong. But it is sometimes humbling when we go through those red flag situations to find out that, some things present in ways that we would never expect.
That's obviously an intense story, and I'd like to assume, but I'm not going to. How did that turn out for you?
I would say it went okay. It was interesting being on the other side of things in the hospital, and it gave me a greater appreciation to what our patients go through. It actually happened twice to me. The second time, I was much quicker to pick it up, but the second time, I ended up getting a corrective surgery, so everything has been pretty good since then, but definitely a whole lot of insight, and it's harder being a patient than sometimes we think it is.
Well, I can sympathize with that 100%. I've unfortunately been a patient way more frequently than I would like to admit, but that's a conversation for a different day. You know, before we wrap up here, I would like to go into a question that we often ask our guests. And in particular, you are a fellow in training currently, so you're not yet a fellow of the academy. I would like to know how it's going for you and what you would say as somebody who has a very different skill set and experience than our average guest. You know, what would you say to a physical therapist that's considering something like fellowship training in orthopedic manual therapy?
So I think my experience is in the Regis orthopedic manual therapy program have been fantastic. It's been a little bit more delayed than I'd like because of COVID-19. And actually, last year, Regis also had a pretty significant cyber attack. So getting some of my final parts of it requirements together have been a little slower than I would like. But it's something that I've enjoyed so far. And I think it's so hard to find people who are, passionate and knowledgeable, that really love the field sometimes. And I think that the fellowship program was a great way for me to meet individuals who are also very passionate about physical therapy. And I love the opportunity to kind of nerd out and talk about almost anything physical therapy. And I think that the fellowship is fun from that perspective, but also adds an element to my clinical decision-making as a clinician, and also helps me be able to better network and find my way in this world of physical therapy. So I can help my patients in the best way possible, not necessarily only in clinic, but also trying to do larger, more ambitious things within our profession as well, and trying to help our profession take up more of a larger role in helping patients, I guess, not only in the U.S., but in many different areas of the world.
I think that's a great contribution to the overall experience. And it's, of course, much the same way that a lot of us feel, not just here at the podcast, but at the Academy. I've been going to the conferences since approximately 2007, I think. And it really is that group that you're talking about where you can geek out with all your physio friends and dive in ways you can in other places. And it's just a great feeling. I can't wait for the conference to come back in person, but also the virtual one's going to be good as well.
Definitely. I think there should be, hopefully we can even get maybe more people involved in a virtual conference as well. And it's going to be different, but I think there is also some unique opportunities that are available when you do something virtually like this.
I agree. And as we're closing out here, Dr. Kinney, I just want to say it's been a pleasure having you as a guest on our podcast today. Thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge and experience with us. We, of course, would be honored to have you back in the future if ever an occasion should arise.
I appreciate it. It was great to spend time with you. And maybe we'll see what happens in the future.
We shall. Take care and stay well.
You too.
This has been a production of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. You can learn more about the Academy by visiting our website at aaompt.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for our acronym, AAOMPT. The views and opinions expressed on the AOMPT podcast are those of the interviewers and interviewees and do not represent the official position of AOMPT. The information presented should not be used as personal healthcare or clinical practice advice. If you need to find an expert orthopedic physical therapist near you, then check out the Find a Fellow feature under the Public Resources tab at www.aaompt.org, which you can find in the show notes.